month. One for Dan, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to the summer special season of Follow the Money. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute. If you're taking a break this summer, but you're still craving a political fix, we are here to help. Giving you the best of from the Australia Institute's popular Politics in the Pub live sessions. If the audio doesn't sound as good as usual, well, it's because we recorded this live in a pub. 2016 saw big highs and lows for Labor Senator Sam Dastyari. You will probably all remember that he stepped down from the shadow front bench earlier this year and that he invited Pauline Hanson out for a halal snack pack on election night. But in what was our very first Politics in the Pub for 2016, Sam Dastyari spoke to our Executive Director Ben Oakwest about an issue close to his heart, his campaign against tax avoidance by multinational corporations and the power of the banks in Australia, asking who really runs this country.
It's my great pleasure to introduce Sam Dastyari, who, if you're here, needs no introduction. I looked up his biography today, thanks to Anna, and saw he was born in 1983. And I had to take a big breath, and I remembered in 1983, I was a member of the Labor Party. I was at high school trying to run a campaign to get Bob Hawke elected, and here is Sam now already having such a huge impact on politics. He's a legend of the New South Wales right, but today, maybe kind of counterintuitively for a leading member of the New South Wales right, he's speaking on the topic of who really runs Australia. Sam's a good friend of the Institute. He's a big player in the Senate, as you've seen. And it's my great pleasure to introduce Sam and thank him for coming to speak about who really runs Australia. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Ben, for that very kind introduction. So can everyone up the back hear me? Yep. I did that once at a country pub and they said, the person in the back said, I can, but I'm happy to swap with someone who can't. So, I wanted to put a slightly different perspective on what's really gone on in Australian politics, because I think there's something fundamentally wrong and rotten with the entire system, almost regardless of where your political persuasions will sit. So let's just park everyone's politics for a moment, whether you're pro-Labor or Green or Liberal or minor party or whatever, and just have a broader discussion about where power lies and why power lies where power lies. And I have to say, yes, I'm reasonably, a younger member of Parliament. I was the General Secretary of the New South Wales branch of the Labor Party before I came into Parliament. I was born in a small town in northern Iran. I came to Australia as a five-year-old during the Iran-Iraq War. That's kind of my story. But I have to say, the thing that shocked me by coming to Canberra in the past 2 years is really about this fundamental question of who runs the country and where power actually rests. Because look, I didn't come to this place as some kind of, you know, wild-eyed, kind of blind, naive, you know, kind of local community activist who suddenly, through some miracle chance, got elected to Parliament on some fluke swing in some seat because of some community effort. You will not find somebody who came more from the ALP machine than me. Like, I am a product of the machine like you would not believe, right? You know, I joined the Labor Party when I was 16. I took over my first branches by the time I was 17. I got called into the ALP head office when I was still in my school uniform at 17 to be told that, you know, my career was over because I'd taken over the whole northern part of Sydney in this. And by 18, they were using my delegates at votes at conference, right? So I didn't want to pretend, you know, I've come to this as some kind of naive. And this is what has shocked me so much about what's so rotten about it is perhaps I thought I understood power and I thought I understood the brutality of politics simply by my time in the New South Wales Labor Party and my time in the New South Wales Labor machine. You know, again, New South Wales Labor Party, I was there when the whole place completely collapsed on itself. I was there throughout the kind of Rudd-Gillard-Rudd period. And none of that braced me for an understanding of just how concentrated, brutal and aggressive a handful of businesses operate and the real corporate power where it actually rests in this country. And that's the bit that's actually blown me away in the past couple of years. And again, I didn't think I came to it from a kind of naive kind of position. Look, here's the big question. There's something fundamentally wrong at the heart of the Australian condition. We're getting healthier. We're getting wealthier on an aggregate kind of level. We're living for longer. Every socioeconomic indicator says things are getting better and better and better. Yet, there's this huge, deep unease at the heart. People are feeling like they're under an incredible amount of pressure. They're under time pressure. They're under social pressure. They're under economic pressure. And there's this incredible growing inequality. You know, I mean, there is something fundamentally wrong with a country where the top seven Australians, seven people, have more wealth than the bottom 20%. 4.6 million people at the bottom are worth the same as the seven richest Australians. Where in the past 40 years, the top 10% have seen their wages grow in real terms by $47,000, when the bottom 10% have seen them grow by $7,000. There is something fundamentally wrong at the heart of this. And the question that I've been kind of asking is, how is it that our policy settings can be so wrong? How is it that our policy agenda can be so kind of off-putting? And how is it that you can have these kinds of decisions constantly being made that really, at the end of the day, have only served a very small elite minority of people over a long period of time? And the reality is this, right? Doesn't matter how you want to break this down, there are 10 companies that really wield the most incredible amount of power in Australia. 10 companies. Four banks, right? And we all know who they are, the Commonwealth Bank, the NAB, Westpac, ANZ. Three big mining companies in Rio, in BHP, and in Fortescue. You've got your two big kind of grocery chains, and you've got your big telco, you know, which is Telstra. 10 companies. And it really doesn't matter how you kind of want to break this up, right? If you want to do it in terms of employees, the four banks have 170,000 people they employ, the two grocery chains do 400,000, the three miners do 145,000, the telco, Telstra, does about 40,000. If you want to do it in taxes paid, the banks pay about $10 billion in tax, the miners pay about $7.5 billion in income tax, plus they pay royalties to states. Again, that's a whole other issue. The grocery chains pay about $2 billion and Telstra pays about $2 billion, which will vary from year to year. But what you have is this unprecedented concentration of corporate influence. And it's not, what's not unprecedented isn't there's a handful of companies that are powerful or that are big. That happens. It happens especially in an economy kind of the size of Australia, but also the nature of Australia. What's happened now is the entire political debate has become so dominated by the interests that they're pushing and the agenda that they're pushing. And you end up with this complete crowding out of a proper political discourse in this country because there is one sectional interest that is so much louder than every other voice out there that's combined. What I mean is this. There is nothing wrong with successful businesses. There's nothing wrong necessarily with big businesses, provided there's, you know, adequate levels of competition and you know, you've got proper regulators. Nothing wrong with that. We want successful Australian businesses. We want them to do well. We also want them to pay their taxes, which is a different matter. But all of these are good things. The problem has become when their lobbying effort and their power within our system and our structure is so strong and so complete that everyone else is being crowded out. So I just want to run through a couple of kind of debates, and I want to give you an example. You look at a situation with the four big banks. You cannot walk through Parliament and not fall over the lobbyists that the banks have employed, right? You can't. They are everywhere, right? And you have a situation where, you know, when the banks are in trouble, let's be clear about this, Right? They were the first people during the GFC asking to have their bailouts, right? And what they got in the Australian context was the deposit guarantees. Now, we believe we guaranteed somewhere between $600 to $700 billion worth of deposits. We say we believe because we're actually not sure. It was such a big number and it was done so quickly. We're even unclear on exactly what it was, right? But when you have a situation like when someone like David Murray, and David Murray is the former CEO of the Commonwealth Bank who just did the review. This isn't some Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, anti-bank kind of crusader. I mean, this is from the inside. Comes out and says something which is imminently reasonable and says this: if the banks are too big to fail, then what can we do to make them more infallible? You're correct. What we should do is turn around and give them greater capital placed on them greater capital requirements. The fight back, the pushback, when we turn around and we go, hang on, look at how you've actually treated victims of financial misconduct. You know, look what happened with Commonwealth Bank. The act, you know, what happened prior to the FOFA legislation, the Future Financial Advice, incredible, I mean, look, criminal activity, a complete and utter rot of behaviour that was happening at a systemic level. Yet the fight, the push, the argument, the pushback that comes back from that ends up dominating the debate. When you end up with a reasonable proposition that comes on miners, which says this: if you're going to be making an obscene amount of profit by ripping our resources out of the ground, you should, by taking the risk and doing that activity in a safe and reliable way, you should be entitled to make profit as a business. No one's, you know, we're not opposing that as principle. But if you're making obscene amounts of money by doing this, and considering these are national resources, perhaps some of that money should be redirected towards things like the low-income super scheme, so the lowest-paid Australians actually have a bit more to retire on. A little bit of that money should actually be redirected towards a school kids bonus, because families are doing it tough enough. And even some of that money should be redirected towards some tax breaks for some smaller businesses, because, hey, how about we let some of the smaller businesses grow into bigger businesses as well? You have the mother of all campaigns being run by the mining lobby. And I just want to give you some figures. The year before the mining tax was introduced, the mining company's advertising spend was $68,000. For the 3 years, which was the duration of that kind of mining campaign fight, they spent somewhere close to $37 million in advertising. Then they went back to spending $50,000. Why? Because $40 million in advertising to fight a government is a lot cheaper than actually paying a tax. And that was the cost-benefit analysis that was done. You know, I can go on about the grocery chains and the fights that they constantly have with the ACCC and the work the ACCC does. I can talk about Telstra and the position and how they fought tooth and nail about different parts of NBNCo to make sure that they end up with the most profitable part. But fundamentally, this is the problem. The problem is that you have a handful of incredibly loud voices that are the loudest voices in the room. And what they've done over the past 20, 25 years is make sure that nobody else is really being heard. So when we talk about things like education funding, when we talk about things like the money that's been torn out of health, what we don't have is an ability to actually have the voices that we need heard being heard in these debates. Because when the power is so concentrated, when influence is so concentrated, when the voices are so concentrated in a handful of incredibly powerful lobbyists, what ends up happening is that no one else ends up getting heard in that debate. Now, there are instances where there's a fight back, and there are instances where it works. On the issue of the future of kind of financial advice and victims of financial crime, it took an enormous campaign which involved Choice, which involved Council of the Aging, which involved kind of national seniors, which involved a whole series of victims groups. People like Ben and others and the Australian Institute were involved in all this, bringing together a coalition of interests to actually be able to effectively fight the Financial Services Council and the Australian Banking Association to make a couple of banks pay up for what was clearly breaches of their own responsibility. And unfortunately, when money isn't involved, it's even harder. And so what makes groups like the Australian Institute so important is making sure there are other voices. What makes this organisation so important is making sure there is other debates and other parts of the debate. Now, that's where I think we've been up until now. I think things are changing, and I think things are going to change. There is an anger out there. There is a frustration. You know, you can call it what you will, but people are pissed off. They're sick and tired of it. They're angry about what they've seen happen. And we've seen this really as a trend internationally, and I think it's a trend that we're going to increasingly see in Australia. How it manifests itself is different in different places. But of course there's a common thread between what happens with Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders or Jeremy Corbyn or even Le Pen in France, right? What the common thread is a sense of frustration and anger when people go, enough is enough, that there is a system here that we feel excluded from, that we feel like we have no more power in our show anymore, and that we actually want to have a say and need to have a say. And I think that's going to drive a massive change in the next couple of years in Australian politics. And I think what it's going to mean for politicians, which I care about more than you guys care about, but I think what it means for politicians, it really is either you understand the system has to change, is going to change, needs to change, and will change, and you try and change the system to achieve those social and other objectives that you believe in, or you end up just getting washed out with the tide.
Wow, what a expose in the Full Court Press on corporate power in Australia. What happened to the leading figure of the New South Wales right, the machine man who was after power for power's sake, that turned him into somebody who can give one of the best exposés and explanations of corporate power in Australia that looks like a kind of Marxist critique of Australian society?
Well, I mean, it's fair to say that during my time as the party secretary in New South Wales, there was often the Stalinist reference, so I'm we'll park that for a moment. But I've got to say, it just blew me away about just how kind of centralised it was. And it was this, really, the bit that actually got me angry was the banks. Right? Like, the banks really got me angry, right? Because let's cut the bullshit, right? We give the banks an implicit subsidy, right? We protect the banks like you would not believe. We have a system designed to ensure that they cannot fail. You know, the four pillars, the banking system, the structures that we have, you know, people like Richard are experts in this. They can talk about this a lot better than I could. But effectively, there is an implicit subsidy there to protect them. And the system and the show and the Australian public have been so good to Australian banks, have been so protective of Australian banks, have effectively rigged the system to make sure they're profitable, to make sure they're wealthy, to make sure they're successful. And in some part, you know, you can argue that's a good thing. 25 or so years of now uninterrupted economic growth is in part because we have an incredibly efficient and successful banking sector, right? But you'd think that with that would come a certain sense of corporate responsibility, that with that would come a sense of responsibility that, hang on, that because of this implicit subsidy, because the system has been so good to us, even if you're going to argue solely for the base of shareholder value, you could argue quite successfully that, hey, if this system has been so good to you, the best way to protect the system is to do the right thing by the system, and that's the best way to do the right thing by your shareholders as your own fiduciary duty. You can argue that. Yet, when you saw the way that they hid, they lied, they spun, especially, I mean, with what happened with CBA, over what is really pissing amounts of money by the size of a bank, simply as the principle of we should never have to pay. Look, you can't sit with these people and not get moved.
That's been episode 15 of Follow the Money, brought to you by the Australia Institute. A very big thank you to Senator Sam Dastyari. We've got a link to our campaign against corporate tax avoidance in the podcast show notes on our website at tai.org.au/podcasts, where you can also find links to previous episodes of Follow the Money. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoyed it, please do share it with your friends and leave a rating on iTunes. It really helps other people to find the podcast. If you live in Canberra or you're visiting and want to see one of our Politics in the Pub events live, please go to the website tai.org.au and sign up. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy. Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum composed our title track, and you can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. Thanks for listening.